introduce to you Jerry L. Thank you very much. I'm Jerry Lawrence, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. The first thing I want to do is thank Tom and Dean and the people who were responsible for bringing me here to this wonderful conference this year. I've heard a lot about Tom throughout the weekend, and he was certainly my idol, and he didn't even know it. Early on, when I first got in corrections, this gentleman who put me in corrections, who you'll hear a lot about, knew Tom, and he talked about him a lot. He said, you need to follow him when you know where he's speaking. And I did that. I went to Lynchburg. I even heard him at an international convention, and I believe it was in Canada that he spoke. I was in San Diego to that, but I think I heard him in Canada when I went to Canada to the International Convention. And I certainly knew that his heart was in the right place, and I knew that that's where I wanted my heart to be, was in corrections. And it has been for a lot of years. It's my passion. I love corrections. So I want to thank you all for letting me be a part of this, and I've learned a lot. The speakers in front of me have been wonderful, and I want to thank you. Some I got to talk to, some I didn't. But you certainly have given me a hard road to hoe here to follow all this. But what I do know is that God's in charge, and that's all that is important. That's all that matters. I'd like to thank our District 19 Correction Chairman and his wife for coming down from Virginia to support me. This young gentleman's heart's in the right place. I can remember years ago when we were at an intergroup meeting or GSR meeting. I'm not quite sure. They bounce back and forth so much with corrections. We've just been bounced here and there in Virginia. But he came to me and he said, you know, I'd like to go in corrections. I'd like to go in the jails. And at the time, he didn't have enough time in to come in. I don't know about you guys, but Virginia's pretty, to get out of the way, set up kind of strict there on how much time we have before we can go inside the walls. And I told him to come back and talk to me when he got his time in. And just like so many others that had come to me and said, this is what I want to do, I thought, well, that'll be the last of that. But it wasn't. He was persistent. He wanted to go. He wanted to get in corrections. And that told me something about that young gentleman. And he is a young guy that, you know, that has got a good start in corrections. He's doing a wonderful job for us there in Virginia, and I want to thank him for that. His heart's in the right place. And we appreciate you, Ted, and thanks for coming down. And I was going to thank my sobriety student for coming with me and her husband, but after she's talked to her, I don't know if I'm going to do that or not. We'll talk about it later. But you know, my home group is Salem's Welcome Home Group. And I was the one that got to name that group. And I was real honored to do that. What we did when we moved there, we all picked out a name for the group and we put it in a little hat and every who's got drawn out somehow or voted on, I can't quite remember. You know, the older you get, the less you remember. And sometimes that's a good thing. And anyway, the mine was chosen, so if you're all ever in the Roanoke Salem area, it's Salem's Welcome Home, and you're certainly always welcome there. You're always welcome there. My sobriety date is August the 22nd, 1988. And for that, I am so filled with gratitude, and I'm so humble to be able to stand here this morning to say thank you. Thank you for my sobriety date. Because it's people like you in rooms like this that's made this possible for me. And I certainly owe a lot of it to corrections, because as I get on there, I guess I better stop, because if I get into that, I won't qualify and then I'll get thrown out. So I know I need to qualify myself to be able to stand here And I'll do that as quickly as possible and move on to where my passion is and the miracles in my life. That's what's so important to me, is those miracles beginning before I ever come into AA and didn't know it. But from the moment that I was in detox, the miracles began. They began with Alcoholics Anonymous sending me a lady to talk to me who became my sponsor. But anyway, I was born and raised back in the country where there was, we had no running water, no electricity. I've heard a little bit of that. We were very poor. My grandparents raised me, and I never felt like the other kids. I've heard it so much from the podiums. I didn't fit in anywhere. You see, my dad and mom separated when I was 3 months old, so I understand. But you know, I had to come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous years later to find out a lot about my dad's side of the family that I didn't know, because it wasn't allowed to be talked about. My dad wasn't talked about. The only thing that I knew about my dad, that he was a no-good drunk. So I never got to see my dad. Never laid eyes on him while he was living. And before I got here, I was told that I was exactly like my dad. I was a no-good drunk. And you know I was the drunk, I was the alcoholic, but I know today the no-good didn't belong there. Didn't belong there with my dad either. And so I learned to hate my dad from the very first that I can ever remember as a little girl. I learned how to hate. I hated my father. I hated that I had to be raised by my grandparents back into the country, wearing feed sack dresses that my grandmother made for me, having to take apple butter biscuits to school when the rich kids had bologna sandwiches. And today, and the other thing is, sometimes I'd take those nasty old ham biscuits that had been for dinner the night before, and then the kids had bologna sandwiches, and I'd think, oh, why can't I have that bologna sandwich, and they have to eat this nasty old ham biscuit. Let me tell you, folks, today I buy those nasty old ham biscuits, and I'm grateful for them. But so you see how things that we think are so bad when we're young. And I got to run around for years and years and years and years and blame my alcoholism on the way I was raised and my father and all that. And I did that. And it kept me very sick. So I not only learned how to hate, I had so much fear. I can remember so well, and I don't remember, a lot of the stuff has been blocked out. God is good. But I remember them telling me when it was time to start school, I had to get a shot. Well, friends, I thought, I knew what guns were. They were around our home, and I knew the hunters, and I knew they got shot, and I knew they killed animals, and I was literally frightened to death because I thought they was taking me there, and I was going to get shot. And I can remember me screaming when I was a little one-room schoolhouse, had 7 grades in it, and 7 different grades in this one little room schoolhouse. And I can remember going in there and being so frightened and screaming and kicking. And you know, that's what I've done all my life. I carried that fear along with the hate and the resentments that I had no idea what was. I didn't know that I was angry and resentful. I didn't know that. I learned that here in these rooms. And I carried it all right into these rooms with me. The only time that I know that I didn't have those feelings is when I was drinking. So when I was in sixth grade, I moved into town. My grandparents moved into town, and I started to a Newcastle High School, a little bit bigger school with a little bit more kids. And I found a group of kids that I fit in with. For the first time in my life, I felt like, yes, everything's okay. There was something about, I was drawn to them. And one of them happened to be the little girl that I'm sponsoring, her mother. I went to school with her mother and father. And I was drawn to them. And we slipped around. We pulled our lunch money, bought beer, slipped around behind school at lunchtime, and I had my first drink of beer. And I thought, oh, my God, it's the nastiest stuff I've ever tasted. But you know what? I didn't know it at the time, but I hadn't been down very long. And I felt, you know, I feel pretty good. You know, I'm all right to go back to school. You know, I hated school. And I mean, I was mean. I was not good in school. I mean, we drank beer and then we'd go to school, skip school, jump out windows, run into town, hide, did all sorts of things, all sorts of things. And I really think I had isms before I ever added the alcohol. I personally believe, my own opinion, that this is an inherited disease. As I said, my father died at the age of 49. He died drunk. And my grandfather took his own life under the influence of alcohol. And it was on and on and on his side of the family and on my side of the family. So I don't know if it's inherited, but I know this. I know today I'm grateful, if I'm going to have a disease, for it to be the disease of alcoholism. I'm grateful for that today. Because, friends, if I didn't have this disease and found you people, I can't imagine what my life would have been like. I didn't know anything when I got here. Nothing. So I ran with this group of kids, and we pulled, steal money. This is early on, very early on, to be able to send somebody to the liquor store to buy liquor, to go to dances on Saturday night, to walk. I mean, we walked. We didn't care how we got there, to drink. And I learned that that's exactly what had been missing in my life. Because when I drank that liquor, I mean, I was there. I was on top of the world. I've got one sister, and she was always the little Miss Goody Two Shoes. And, you know, I even thought she was okay when I was drinking. And that I knew that I needed this stuff. So I continued to drink until I was junior in high school, and my mom was gone. She took my sister with me, and my grandmother died, and it was only me and my granddad at home. And I hated that life. And so I met this guy in the Navy, and I married him and took my first geographical cure. I thought, if I just get out of this town, if I just get away from these people. See, I took those geographical cures for a long time, many times. But what I didn't know till I got here, that wherever I went, there I was. That I took the problem with me. I didn't know I was the problem. I thought it was everybody else. I blamed my parents, my grandparents, my sister, anybody that I could blame besides myself. But you see, folks, I didn't know. I really didn't know. I never heard the word alcoholism. I'd heard no good drunks plenty of times, but not alcoholism. So I didn't even know what alcoholism was, much less that it was a disease. So I believed what I was told, that I was the no good drunk. And I had that name in that town. So I thought, well, I'll marry this guy to get away from home. Everybody will be happy when I'm gone because I stayed in so much trouble. And I'll get married and leave home and things will get better. I moved to Maryland. Got my first job. I looked a little older than I was, so I lied about my age. Got a job in an officer's club there. And that lasted exactly 4 weeks, and I got fired for being drunk. And we didn't have anything, so how I got my silverware and everything else was I stole it from the officer's club. I didn't see anything wrong with that. He was in the Navy. Why not? They owed it to him. But anyway, this gentleman drank just like I did. And this marriage lasted 9 years. And it broke up, direct result of alcoholism. Now, you see, I thought it was him. It was all his fault. Till I got here and you people told me to take a look at me. Take a look at me. So I know today it's a direct result of alcoholism on both sides, because he died drunk too. So I know we don't call other people alcoholics, but he could drink more than me, so I really think he had a problem. But out of this marriage, something wonderful did come, just like always. I have two beautiful children. these 13 months apart. I didn't figure out how they got here until I had them 13 months apart, one bam, one another, and I figured out how to stop that. So, but I'm telling you, I knew nothing, guys, when I got here. Didn't know what caused it. So here I am settled at, I had my first daughter when I was 17. I quit school to marry this guy and went away. Had my first daughter at 17, 18 when I had my second daughter. Now here I am, a kid, an alcoholic that I didn't know I was, with two little children. And when my oldest one was 5, this marriage dissolved. It just couldn't be. I mean, it was just fighting and screaming, and it was just horrible. And so somehow, I loved these little girls. I really did. I think I didn't really know what love was until I had those children. And I loved those little girls. I loved those little girls with all my heart. And, you know, it just made me wonder how in this world I could do the things I'd done then. Today I know why I done it, because I'm an alcoholic, but I didn't know that back then. Anyway, I was able to curb my drinking. Let me move right on here. And till I got these children raised. Now, that wasn't easy. My mother did step in and help me. The dad wouldn't provide any support for them. And it was a really rough road to hoe to raise these girls. But, you know, even in the times that I didn't drink, I drank every chance I got, but not around the children when they were little. I was able, I guess I had not crossed the line into alcoholism yet. And let me tell you, I hated who I was. I hated you. I hated all the people that caused my life to be like it was. I was filled with so much hate for my ex-husband. And I didn't have a clue what forgiveness was. And I wasn't about to even talk about that at that time. So the minute I got my children raised, my children did very well. When they got married and left home, they did graduate. I got them graduated. But when they got married and left home, the race was on. The race was on. Now I can do what I deserve to do. I've raised these little girls. You know, they've got their education. And now it's mine. Life is mine. And I'm going to be happy for a change. I'm sick of this. So I bought myself a camper and a pontoon boat. And I put it down on Smith Mountain Lake. And I said, now the fun begins. And the fun began. The fun began. And I met a gentleman, another gentleman who liked to party just like I did. And in the end, I married this gentleman. I was drawn to people like that. But I joined the Coast Guard Auxiliary when I was on the lake. And, you know, and we just drink. From the time we get up, we would say we can't drink liquor till after 5 because we'd be alcoholics. And we had Bloody Marys, whatever the world you called them, and all this stuff before that. And my life was a mess, folks. It was just a mess. Now, I owned my own business, and I was still able to work because I knew I was alone. I was alone. Kids were gone. Everybody's gone. Nobody knows what I'm doing. I do as please. And I know I've got to work. If I'm going to drink, I got to work. And so all my life I've worked. I think it's alcoholics, there's something about us, we're pretty good workers. I guess it's because we don't have to if we're going to drink. So this continued on, and I kept getting sicker and sicker. And as the disease progressed, things started getting worse for me. Of course, I started losing my customers, my clients. And people started kind of shying away from me. And I thought, what in the world is going on? What is wrong with this picture? I mean, I'm not bothering anybody. I heard it from the podium the other night. I'm just doing my thing. But I finally got so sick until one day my daughter said, Mama, you can't see your grandchildren anymore unless you quit drinking. And I loved my granddaughter. She was my first granddaughter. And I adored this little girl. And now, Now they were going to take the children away from me. And my daughter said, "And Mom, I really don't want to be around you either." I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand that. Because when her dad, and I still don't quite understand this, but it's okay today, but her dad drank all the time, and he had a little camper he had parked not far from her house, and he'd get drunk by all the camper, and my daughter would run, pick him up, and take him to the hospital. Duh. And she don't want nothing to do with me. So, well, you know what happens. What is it? The big book says something about that in the vision for you. What is it? The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society and from life itself. That's what the big book tells us in the vision for you. And so I really withdrew then. I just thought, you know what? Nobody cares what I've done. Nobody cares about all the things I've done. The money I gave my daughter, the way I bought for my grandchildren. You know, and I have one daughter in Colorado. My other daughter, she got married and moved to Colorado when she was 18. And I didn't know it until a time came up, but her husband was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody mentioned it to me. She was an Al-Anon. It was never mentioned to me. I didn't know anything about it. And so I got to where that I had to have a drink every 2 hours. Now, this was pretty hard, folks, because, I had it hid all over the place. Everywhere I went, I knew that I couldn't go anywhere where there wasn't alcohol. So it made my life real, real enclosed here. I had it in my salon. I had it in ceilings and vacuum cleaner bags. And at home, I was so sick and so paranoid by this time. And I bought half a gallon. I mean, there was no way Fist even think about doing anything for me. And I would buy them, and I hid them all over my house, and I lived alone. What's wrong with that picture? Something's wrong here. Then I couldn't find it. And then I would panic. Then I go to the liquor store, and it was a merry-go-round, and I was on it, and I couldn't get off. I just could not. I hated myself when I took that drink. But I could not drink. And I drank myself sober, really. What happened, the final straw, what really got me here, is my daughter came in from New York. And I'm assuming that my other daughter had called. I don't know, because my daughter, my oldest daughter, who didn't want anything to do with me, is one of the kindest, gentlest girls that I've ever met in my life. I mean, anybody that knows her, and she's not an alcoholic, she hates liquor, but she would do anything in the world for anybody. But she rejected me. That's what I just couldn't get this. But they came and wanted me to go to an AA meeting. Well, it was kind of like a little intervention. And so I thought, you know what, I think I'll go to get them off my back. Well, so I proceeded to go to my first AA meeting, which was my home group for 15 years, Forest Park. And I don't remember anything about it. I remember the two of them practically carrying me in. So I don't remember anything about the speaker. I don't remember anything except this girl coming up to me and saying, "Here's my phone number." And boy, was I furious. I didn't want her phone number. No. And it's so funny, this because I'll jump a little ahead of myself before I forget it. But I lost my sponsor after 15 years, and this girl is now my sponsor that I didn't want anything to do with. So you see how God works in our lives? God's in charge. I mean, I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth next, but this is what I do know. I know that I ask God to deliver the message that needs to be heard here this morning. And my faith is so strong, I know that's what will happen. If I just say one thing that helps one person, that's what will happen. So I just couldn't go back anymore because, you see, that was 2 hours that I was gone from home that they took me to that meeting. And by the time I got back home, you know, y'all know what it's like, anybody that's been that far, I was shaking. I just couldn't make it. So they said, "Mommy, you really need to do something. And why don't you go in?" I couldn't go into treatment because I didn't have any money. Any money I had was used for buying liquor. And I owed everybody in the world. Well, you know what it's like when we get here. We don't have anything but bills. And so they wouldn't take me in treatment. I did talk to Mount Regis, but I didn't have any insurance and no money, so they wouldn't take me. So they told me, you need to go to into the emergency room, into the port, they can put you in detox, and at least detox your mom or you're going to die. I said, "I'll do it in the morning." Always in the morning. Always in the morning. So the next morning, I had enough liquor, I thought, to get me through the night. And every 2 hours, as I said, "Listen, folks," it was just like every 2 hours, like you'd set a clock, my eyes popped open. And I had to have that drink. And I really thought I needed to drink at first to get back to sleep. I had no idea I was passing out. And I would get up and I'd go to the bathroom under the sink where I kept part of the liquor and get that drink and get back to bed. But before I got here, the bottle had to be under the bed. I could roll off of the bed, get the drink, get back in bed and sleep 2 more hours. Now that's sick. So anyway, then I ran out of liquor at 8 o'clock the next morning. And the liquor store opened up at 10. Now, folks, I was a mess. I was just a mess. I weighed probably not 100 pounds soaking wet, no makeup, my hair a mess. And I proceeded to go to the liquor store. And they sold me that half a gallon. And that probably helped save my life. I don't know. But anyway, I took the half a gallon home. I was so weak, I could barely hold it. I got into the house, I got a cup, and I straddled around the commode because, you see, I was so sick. I was so sick. I couldn't keep anything on my stomach. I would pour that liquor out into that cup, and I would drink it down, and I'd bend right over the commode and throw it up. And I just kept saying, "Please, dear God, let enough keep down that I can function." I knew the children were coming to take me to detox, but I couldn't function. I knew what I was doing. I knew where I was going to go. I knew what was going on. So I had drank myself sober, but I couldn't walk. You know, the legs just kind of wobbly. They didn't carry too well. So the children called me and asked me if I was ready. And I said, "Well, just give me just a little bit longer." They said, "Is your suitcase packed?" "Oh, yeah, suitcase is packed." Well, in the suitcase, I found later that I had a carton of cigarettes, a blow dryer, and some makeup. So that's what I went to detox with. They took the cigarettes, they took the blow dryer, and they took the makeup. So I had nothing. That was pretty funny. Oh, thank you, God, that we can look back and laugh at ourselves today. But anyway, what I really want to talk about this morning is miracles. And the very first big miracle happened in my life when I went to detox. Now, the only thing I had left was the rings I have on my fingers this morning. Didn't have the little AA ring. But I can remember so well saying to that lady when they checked me in. I remember checking in. I remember the whole thing. It just took somebody had to carry me. Couldn't walk. Take care of those rings because they're worth money. And I knew that was the only thing I had that was worth anything. And I was probably going to need to sell them. So they took my rings, and my daughter came. She went down with me, and I said, "Don't you come back here to see me." I was so mean. I said, "You didn't want nothing to do with me. Now I don't want nothing to do with you." I mean, I was cruel. I was, you know, I just can't imagine. And a couple of times in between, I tried to commit suicide. And one time, my son-in-law had came down, and I was sitting in a chair, and I had the gun laying beside me. And he kicked the gun over and took the gun. But you know, now, I am so selfish and self-centered that I never thought one time about if I killed myself, how my children and grandchildren would feel, what I would do to them. I never thought about anybody but poor old me. What a hard life I'd had. And I didn't have any dad and all this stuff. So, but anyway, that's the last thing I remember. They took me upstairs And they told the children, they called children and told them, if I made it for 24 hours, I might make it. I had alcohol poisoning, all this other stuff. And I didn't know any of that and really didn't care. And so while I was in detox, the miracle happened. I don't remember anything about what, except what people told me, except one day sometime in between that, I can remember a lady saying to me, she put her arm around me, and she said to me, I love you. She had the sweetest, kindest voice I'd ever heard. Now, folks, I couldn't see her. It was like an angel appeared and disappeared. I mean, that's all I remember her saying. And I never had anybody to tell me before that I could remember in a kind, gentle way that they loved me. So I knew, as sick as I was, and they was having to keep me knocked out to keep me alive, that that lady had to be an angel. I knew that. I didn't know anything else, but I knew that. And I was there 5, 6, 7 days. I don't know how long I was in detox. $3,000 worth, and I didn't have any money. That's what I know, $50 a month, after they threatened me. But another time, in the meantime, this lady appeared again. And this time with a gentleman. Now, I could see figures. I mean, I knew these people were standing there, and I knew they didn't belong there, because I'd done cussed every doctor, everybody in there out. And I knew it wasn't the doctors. And this time, I remember her saying, Jerry, we're from Alcoholic Anonymous. We have come to tell you that you don't have to live this way anymore. And that we love you. And she introduced me to her friend, and he was AA. And he talked to me. And I faintly remember, I hope that's really all, I guess, that God wanted me to hear at the time. And I knew that moment that I wanted that lady. I wanted what she had. Didn't know what she looked like. Could not have identified her if my life depended on it. But I knew from the gentle touches and the hugs of these two people from Alcoholic Anonymous that I wanted what they had. And if there was any way that I could get it, I would. So she said she called a lot of times, and I'd come to the phone and say hello, and it'd go blink. You know, all this stuff. And so she told me I was going to get out that day. And she said, Jerry, I want you to meet me at a meeting. I said, what kind of meeting? What meeting? Where? And she told me about Big Book, this meeting. And she said, I'm going to meet you there. She called me on the phone. And I wanted so much what that lady had. I knew some way, somehow, I'd make that meeting that night. I went home, took a bath, showered, done my hair, looked half decent, and found that meeting. And as I walked into that meeting, I didn't know who I was looking for. I was so scared. That overwhelming fear that I'd had all my life. I just could barely walk. It was just like my legs were drunk again. And this beautiful lady walked up to me, and she said, Jerry, I'm fine. She said, I'm the lady that come to see you. And she put her arms around me again, and she hugged me. And she said, I'm so glad you're here. She said, you're going to be okay. We love you here. She bought me a big book at night. That big book I can't carry anymore. I've done the pages has practically fell out of it, so I've got it all wrapped up. And she said, I want you to call me tomorrow. And she gave me her phone number. Folks, that was the heaviest phone I ever picked up to call that lady. I wanted what she had, but I didn't want her to know who I was. Now, as if she didn't already know. I mean, she doesn't seem in detox. And I didn't want her to know who I really was. I wanted to keep her at limb. But I did what she asked me. I called her the next day, and my journey into Alcoholic Anonymous begun. And she was my first miracle. This lady had more love than anybody I've ever met. And she was for the underdog. She was for people like me. She taught me how to go and help the winos on the street. Jerry, these are the people. These are the people we need to love and help, because they have never been loved. They don't know what it is. She taught me about love. She taught me about unconditional love. She taught me all the things that I'd never heard, and I loved this woman. And so she told me I was too sick to do anything else. She just wanted me to go to meetings. Now, in the meantime, I think a second real miracle, I went to meetings. I called her every day. She met with me. She told me, she asked me to do certain things, like of a morning, get up and read your little 24-hour book, your meditation books and your prayers, and do all the things that we're taught to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and not to forget where they came from, and to thank God at night. And she introduced me to St. Francis. I mean, she loved St. Francis. His stuff was all over her house, all over her books, and the love, and I've heard her say so many times, I just want so much to be able to have the love St. Francis had. She was a wonderful person, but she also reminded me, don't depend on me. I'm just going to be your friend. I'm your sponsor. She turned out to be my sponsor. And but the second miracle happened, and I know a lot of you in here knows him. I know Tom does, wherever Tom's at. But this great big black gentleman named Emerson Gilmer, and I can say that today because he's with my sponsor at a bigger meeting in the sky, and he lived across the street from me. Now, listen, folks, for the ones you don't know, he was scary. James knows. Wherever James is, he'll tell you about Emerson anytime you want to know. And so Emerson took me under his wings that I didn't want to be. But I had to thank him before it was over. And he told me, he introduced me to corrections. And he said, Jerry, he said, I want you to take the message into the girls to Roanoke County Salem Jail. And I said, oh, no. No, no. I wasn't about 16, 18 months sober. I can't do that. And he just threw the application down on my kitchen table. He said, fill it out. And his eyes gets bigger and he gets blacker. Absolutely, and I'll tell you the truth, and knows Emerson Gilmer. And guess what I done? I filled out the application. Now, him and I were good friends, my sponsor, of course, because they both had time behind them. And he was in cahoots with my sponsor. Oh, yeah, they talked all the time about me. And so I did. He said, and he would train me, him and a little short white guy named Fred Ferris, who was his sponsor, who was Emerson's sponsor at the time. And he said, you'll do this, this, and this. Now, folks, if people had asked me kindly to do things like that when I got here, I probably would not have done them. God knew who to put in my life at the right time, people like Emerson Gilmer, to teach me about giving, about others, to get out of myself. So it started my journey. It started my journey into corrections. Thank you, Emerson. Thank you, God. Listen, corrections has been one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done in my life, ever, ever. I was when I started, there was... Our area is not very big in corrections. We don't do as well as a lot of the other states. I don't know what it is. Well, you know, if nobody was carrying any message into the women at this time, and that's been only 21 years ago, that something was wrong with our area with no corrections, nobody going into corrections. But anyway, Emerson and Fred, they said, one said, I'll take you 1 week and you'll go with me the next. And they did that, and they wouldn't said, you won't get turned loose for 6 weeks because you're going to learn how to do this thing. You're going to learn what it's about. And but he taught me well. He said, now, Jerry, he said, the first thing you got to remember is when you go in to that meeting, it's an AA meeting. And you got to remember that you're there to keep yourself sober. That's up front, first and foremost. Don't be whining, oh, they ain't doing this. And the guy, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear none of that. Because you're there to keep yourself sober. And you're there to help another suffering alcoholic if they want it. If they want to change your life. He said, I will take you in and we'll show you how to respect the staff. I've heard so much said this weekend about it. But he taught me that you got to have a good rapport with the staff. Up front and foremost, if you expect to accomplish anything in corrections. So I did that, and at the end of 6 weeks, they turned me loose, and I took it in every week by myself for almost 2 years because I didn't know that anybody else was going to be that crazy and go with me. And at the end of 2 years, We had one prison, Camp 25, and they wanted to open it back up, and they asked me to help. Now, this prison was 25, 28 miles away from me, but you know what? Emerson said, you do it. I said, I don't see you doing it. But this time, I was ready to talk back to him. Oh, yeah, we went toe-to-toe lots and lots of times. And but anyway, I went down, and a lady was, at that time, she had 20-some years of sobriety, worked in corrections. And she trained me how to carry the message into the inmates, into the, you know. Now, I loved going into the prisons. It was certainly different from the jails. But I can tell you that I wasn't there too long until we started getting volunteers, and we got the prison running good. And I got to where I didn't have to go but every other week. But I want to tell you, I'm so grateful for you people, you know, that went there before me, because I made some real good friends in that prison. One guy stands out in my mind, this black guy, good-looking black guy, and he was young, and he was, you know, I would go down and I'd talk to him and say, you just don't belong here. I know we pay the consequence of our behaviors, but he had been coming in and out of the system. And I said, now, this time when you get out, I said, you call me, meet you at the gate. I'll meet you at the gate. Well, my mouth was really big, you know, and I thought, yeah, that'll be good. Well, one day, I got the call from Daniel. Jerry, I'm getting out. I'm at the gate. Come and get me. I was scared to death. So what did I do? I ran to Emerson's house, and I got Emerson. I said, come on, Emerson, we're going. And, you know, he's been a lifelong friend. Daniel's sober. He moved away from here. I get a Christmas card from him every year. He called me and say, hey, Mom. I get phone calls periodically from him to thank me. So people in prisons aren't bad people. That's what I didn't understand. I thought if you were in jails and prisons, you were bad people. I didn't understand. It was bad behaviors from the chemicals that we put in our bodies. And only by God's grace, only by God's grace, there sat I. And let me tell you something, friends. That prison, 15 years, it closed. It was one of the ones that the state decided we didn't need any longer and took away from us. And I was real sad about that. But I can tell you that going in corrections has literally saved my life. I learned what the love that my sponsor tried to tell me about, the unconditional love, to be able to look at another girl and say, you don't have to live this way any longer. I care. I love you. When you get out, call me. I'll take you by the hand. I heard, I don't know who it was, maybe Tom say, we need to take them by their hands and go with them. And, you know, the volunteers, I'd done that. So when the prison closed and we got a new regional jail 2 or 3 years ago up in Salem, and so they asked me to come up there and get the meetings going. And I met with staff, and I was grateful to do that. But I thought, you know, I can't do this thing alone. And I started recruiting girls, and I got people like Jenny and the other girls from my home group. And we worked hard, and the first thing you know, we had 30 volunteers up at the Western Jail. What a blessing. What a miracle. We were able to carry this message in. And it's still going. It's up and running. Of course, Ted's taking care of it now. But, you know, when I go into them meetings, I got to remember. It's a meeting. It's an AA meeting. It just happens to be in a different location. These people are alcoholics just like me. Why would I make them any different? But the biggest thing corrections does for me today in going into these places is I know that I'm an alcoholic. I'm one drink. Just one drink away from back where I was and in that same jail or prison with those girls. It can happen any time that I so choose to pick up a drink. And you see, I'm an alcoholic. The big book tells me it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's like a thief in the night. And I believe that. And when I go in that jail and come back out, I never fail to say, thank you, God. Only by your grace, I'm coming back through that door. And I thank God for the privilege of going into these institutions and facilities and places to help the still suffering alcoholic, the people like myself, like me. And that's you know, that's what keeps me sober today. Now, I sponsor girls, and another little miracle in my life, there's been so many miracles in my life, I know I don't have time to talk about them, but some of them are so important to me that I really thought I was in charge and that I was in control. And but God had ways of showing me different. There was just this little short black girl, and she came to me and she said, she had 21 years of sobriety. And she said, Jerry, I want you to sponsor me. And I said, oh, to myself. I didn't say that to her. But soon, I said, I'll have to think about it. And of course, where did I go? Randy Emerson's house. Emerson's house, real quick, because I knew that Emerson's wife and Ann was really good friends with this girl. But I also knew that this girl wasn't really clean and sober with her 21 years. But I tried my best. I tried my best not to sponsor this girl. I did everything in my power, and I even said, God, why did you put her in my life? I mean, I was really upset. I want you all to know that this little girl, she was 60 years old. She had 21 years of sobriety, according to her. Taught me more, and more about love than anybody that he's ever put in my life. Now, I've lost this little girl. Jenny Olives knew she was a wonderful little girl. And we, had some words, and I told her what, we work steps. And she said, I won't work those steps again. I've already worked. And I said, honey, that's all right. Get yourself another sponsor. You don't have to do anything in this program. It's suggestions. Yep. Right. So she decided we'd work a step, and she did. And, honey, I led her. I took her hand, and we led her through the steps. And she looked at me, and she said, Jerry, I'm smoking pot. I said, I know. She said, shall I pick up a white chip? I said, hey, I don't know. Not me. You know inside who you are. You know about God. You know what you need to do. And the subject was dropped. And our anniversary was going to be on that. No, wasn't their anniversary, something else. Anyway, on that Monday night, when I was giving out chips that night, and when a white chip was called, that little girl come up, and she got the white chip. And she just fell in my arms, boo-hooing. That takes a lot, friends, to have 21 years that you haven't had a drink of liquor, to come up and say, I want to start. And she looked at me, and she said, I want what you got. She knew my sponsor, too. She said, I want to be like you. I want to be like you and yours. What a miracle. What a miracle, friends. This is the girl that I wanted to throw to the wayside because, I knew I couldn't sponsor because she was smoking pot. Well, God had other ideas. God had other ideas. And I know it's getting running out of time here, but there's a couple other miracles that's happened in my life. My sponsor said, you didn't get sober to sit around and do nothing. Didn't have a high school education. She said, you need to go back. But before this, let me backtrack just a second here. When I was 5 years sober, and I was carrying all this hate in my heart for my father, and it was blocking me. Of course, I didn't block it. And she told me I need to find my dad's grave, who's here, somewhere here in North Carolina. And you need to go to that grave, and you need to make amends to your father. Make amends to my father? Look what he did to me. No way. And she said, Jerry, you've got to learn forgiveness. She said, and we talked. So I said, okay, if it'll make her happy, I'll do this. Now, you see, my sponsor taught me a lot about motives. She said if our motives are pure, we're going to be okay. But if they're not pure, hey, it isn't going to work. Well, I did find that grave here in North Carolina, and my motives weren't pure. And I went, and I said, for some reason, I'm supposed to make amends to you. I'm supposed to forgive you. I don't know why, but for me to live my life, that's what I'm doing. And I left, and I went home, and I told my sponsor I didn't feel any different. She let it go for a little while, probably another year. We talked, we kept talking about it. And she kept doing things like, suppose your children hadn't forgiven you. And you talk about you want to be like St. Francis and you want to do this. What about the forgiveness he talks about? It's better to forgive than... Jerry, we need to do something about this. You need to realize that your father had the same disease of alcoholism that you've got. There was no Alcoholic Anonymous when your father drank himself to death and died. You're blessed. You have Alcoholic Anonymous to show you how to live. You don't know how your father must have felt because you two little girls that he couldn't love like you love your little girls. She said, you need to think about these things and pray about these things and pray about this forgiveness. You need to go back to that grave and you need to get honest. Honest. And I did, and I thought about it, and at that time I sincerely came back here. I found that grave, I hit my knees on that grave, and I said, please forgive me. I knew not what I'd done, and I didn't. I didn't. And I said to my dad, I know you're a good person. I know I'm just like you. I'm just like you. And I talked to my dad. And I felt a weight of the weight lifted off of my shoulders. I knew that I had a good, kind father who had a disease of alcoholism just like me. So I forgive, and guess what? Like all the rest of the stories we hear, forgiveness came to me. My children have more respect for me today than I could ever imagine have gotten respect from anybody. But you know, my sponsor said, don't even think about going to those girls and telling them you're sorry. Listen, you've been doing that for years. And I can remember saying to them girls, I won't drink anymore. And let me tell you, like everybody else, I meant that from the bottom of my heart, with every fiber in my being. I wanted to be the right kind of mother. The daughter, the sister. I wanted to be, but I didn't know how to be. And, you know, just so many miracles. And here not long ago, a big miracle happened. In fact, 3 weeks ago, we was trying to help this young guy in our my group. And he was 49, and I loved this little fellow. He was very gentle and kind, and he wouldn't say much. Of course, I've got a big mouth, and I chase them down. And I get a hold of them. And it's hard for them to run from me, these youngsters. And so at first, they don't like me very well, but most of them grow to love me. And this little fella came in, and he got 30 days and picked up a 30-day chip. And he disappeared. But he lived close to me, just like Emerson had lived close to me. And but I would see him on the street walking. And one Sunday morning, we both walked. I walked a lot. I walk a lot. And I ran into him, and he had his Bible under his arm. And I said, David, I said, I miss you. And he said, well, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to church now. See my Bible? And I said, that's good. That's great. I said, but you know, I wish you'd come back and be with us too. And I talked to him a few minutes, and I got to put my arm around him, and I said, you know where I'm at. Please come back if you want to. Well, we buried that little fella. Memorial was 2 weeks ago, and I went to that memorial service. And this minister that did his memorial, something just hit my heart. And he talked about the addictions. And he talked about if there's anybody out here addicted, you know, there's help. And I mean, and I said, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And he said, you can even come and talk to me. So, you know, it was like something just said to me, Jerry, You need to call that minister. Well, now here I go, trying to control things, I thought. But you know, I prayed about that, and I couldn't let it go. And I called this minister 2 weeks ago. And I said, can I make an appointment and talk to you? Now, here I am. I'd never done anything like this in my life. I thought, I don't know. Am I going nuts? I took the big book and an Al-Anon book, and off I go. And some literature, a literature. And I said, I know you wonder why I'm here. I said, well, it isn't to promote Alcoholic Anonymous. I said, I want to say that first and utmost, because Alcoholic Anonymous is not promotion. It's attraction. It's attraction. I said, but you said some things that really touched my heart. And I said, I need to talk to you. And I need to know. I said, because David was one of my friends too. And I said, we lost him to this disease. I'm just wondering how much you know about this disease. I stayed with that minister for 1 hour. I mean, it was a wonderful meeting. I asked him if he'd like to have the big book to read and an Al-Anon book. And he said, I would love to, Jerry. This minister took, and I've gone back to his church both Sundays in a row, and he took the literature. He thanked me. I was able to say, if you ever need my help, here's my number, and I can get the help you need. What a miracle. What a miracle. This little guy didn't die in vain. He didn't die in vain. So anyway, I've lost Emerson and his wife. I've lost my own sponsor, and you heard me say I got another sponsor. Didn't for a year. I don't recommend that. Don't go a year without a sponsor. No. I'm fortunate because I had the right people in my life. A lot of you here know Ray Rice. I know the taper does. And the old timers that God so diligently put in my life to love me when I couldn't love myself. But it wasn't like a sponsor, guys. Just anybody new here, get a sponsor. Get a sponsor. So I did get another sponsor. And life, there's peaks and there's valleys, just like Emerson Gilmer talks about. What he said to me was, Jerry, I want you to thank God for the valleys. And I thought, I don't understand all this stuff. And he said, because if it wasn't for the valleys, you wouldn't know how to be grateful for the peaks. And they told me if it was easy, when I'd say this is hard, it needs to be hard. If it's easy, you'll be doomed to repeat it, Jerry. It needs to be this. So I learned about the peaks and the valleys that Emerson talked about all the time. And you know, they were okay. Because I know when the valley comes that I'm supposed to learn something. And I try my best to do that. And I can only do that with the help of people like you. Rooms like this. God allowing me to go into the correctional facilities. To carry the message to the less fortunate. And which could be me and still could. And you heard me just touch a few minutes on that my sponsor was a great lover of St. Francis. And the very first time I spoke at 14 months, she said, Jerry, she said, I think you need to close your meetings with a St. Francis prayer. Now, you know, I've done that from that day to this, and I do this in her honor. The St. Francis prayer is on page, you'd think I know, 99 and the 12 and 12, and it goes like this. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Thank you.